This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat.
Thank you very much for coming to share your experience and also just be a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month. Take us back.
Yeah. I know I'd been tired kind of in the month preceding, and I know I've been a bit stressed at work and those kinds of things, but that was about it. I actually felt okay overall. Didn't have any of the classic type symptoms, the headaches, the nausea, and memory issues that often I've read about in terms of people that have quite challenging diagnosis processes. Actually, it all came as a bit of a shock. Yeah, so go back to it. It was a Thursday in October last year. I picked up Jesse from school, as I always would do, and then out to play football that evening. As I said, I felt really good. I felt fit. I felt well. I felt present. I felt I was enjoying the game. 60 minutes in, it was absolutely like being hit by lightning. As it happened, I completely knew deep in my heart that I was now different. And something was never going to be the same again. That moment is completely heartbreaking. It was still now, it's heartbreaking to think about that moment. Yeah. Obviously, what I didn't know at the time, what I do know now is a focal aware seizure. I didn't really understand in that moment. I thought, obviously, a seizure is something where you become unconscious, you have more convulsions, those types of things. I had no understanding about this whole broad range of seizure symptoms. I managed to get myself home, looked at me as I came through the door, and I'll never forget this either. She said, "What's happened to you?" And I don't know. She could just tell. She knew something had happened, even without me saying anything. And that was quite astonishing and shows the kind of level of how much she understood and understands me, if you like. Without saying anything, she could just tell. I just needed sleep, actually, to be honest. That was the only thing I was thinking about in that moment. I was just like, I just need to sleep. Something's weird. Something's happened that's weird. I just need to at least I'll sleep it off. I'll be okay in the morning. I wasn't. Two visits to the GP, two A&E trips over that kind of the few days that followed. I now realise I'd had around 15 more seizures in that weekend that followed, Thursday night. Second time I got into A&E, they said, "No, we're going to do a CT scan." Well, that was when I was like, hang on, there is something going on here, isn't there? There really is. Even though deep down I felt like I knew it, it was confirmed by just the fact they said, "We're going to do a CT scan." And then, the doctor took me and my wife into a kind of a side room. And again, you just think,
okay,
this isn't right.
Yeah.
Something's not right. There's something he doesn't want to say with other people watching, so to speak. Then he looked and he said, "You don't want to hear this. No one wants to hear this after a CT scan of your head or any part of your body for that matter." He said, "We found something." That moment eats me up completely. My emotions went out of control. I couldn't even think. I couldn't speak. I just completely broke down. It was, as I said, it felt like I knew something was wrong. But again, it was my fears were coming to life.
You were scared.
I was absolutely, I've never been more afraid. Never been more afraid. And within the couple of weeks, I'd been in hospital for a few days, had more scans, MRIs, more CT. And then I met the neurosurgeons and they said to you, "I have a brain tumor. It's extensive, it's complex, and we need to urgently operate on you because we want to prolong your life." And
I think that moment is one of the most...
It's like devastating.
Yeah.
As compassionate and as empathetic as they were in that moment. Nothing takes away the power of work like that. No, absolutely nothing. And then by the end of November, I had 10 hours of brain surgery.
Did they manage to get it all out the first time they did this, or did they have to leave some because of where it was?
Yeah, so they told me beforehand, they said, "We can't take it all. The risk to your life is too great." So yeah, they had to leave some behind. They knew surgery couldn't take it all, and they knew that radiotherapy, chemotherapy, and anything else they can muster up will not be enough. And it's now about management and not curable, but they say it's treatable. And that's, yeah, how we are. It's sort of, that's the sort of situation I've tried to come to terms with over the last like 5 months.
Did the seizures stop after the surgery?
They did for a while, but not completely. But they certainly went into remission for a while. I was on anti-seizure medication from the day after I had the first one, and I still am to now. But they're definitely, I feel like they're under control. We've had to try a few different anti-seizure medications, and obviously all of those come with their own side effects, which can be really challenging at times too. But yeah, for the most part, the worst of those seizures was actually the very first one. The very first one. It was the most significant. It was the most prolonged. It was the most pronounced. It had the widest range of symptoms that came with it in terms of deja vu, in terms of some visual disturbance, in terms of other kind of sensory disturbance, in terms of taste and smell. Hopefully since then, it's been slightly more, under control, but not completely disappeared. Not completely.
Yeah.
I still get, auras, we might like to call them.
Do you get fearful when you get the aura? I had seizures. That was, I had them as well. So I'm on medication for it. But that aura first, it's taken me years to move on from that, where it scared me so much that it's frightening. It is scary for me. And obviously for you, it is scary.
Oh,
and
it is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. No, it is. Because you just feel you have no control. And you're like.
You have no control.
Yeah, and you're not sure what's going to happen.
No, you don't know. You don't know how far this next one's going to go.
Yeah.
You know, how deep it's going to go, how long it's going to last. Mm. And that's the scary thing. It's like your own body, your own mind, your own brain, if you like, is doing it to you. And that's, in some ways, that scares me more.
Yeah.
Than if it was something outside of me, so to speak. Yeah. So it is truly terrifying. Yeah.
Which is the medication you're taking?
For the moment, I'm taking a combination of lacosamide and vibeacetam.
I haven't heard of those two.
It's been better, but having two is also a challenge because then you get two different sets of side effects plus combination side effects where they seem to encourage each other, which is tough.
Do you think one of the worst things is the fatigue that you get from it? Because I don't know whether it's the surgery that gives us the fatigue or whether it's the medication or both put together.
Yeah. Fatigue is definitely an issue. I've really learned the hard way where my limitations are. And you're right, is the fatigue from the surgery? Is it from the tumour in the site? Is it from the medication? You don't really know. All of it added together, fatigue is a really significant challenge for kind of people living with brain tumours, I'm sure pre and post-surgery, and any other treatments that they're having. Yeah, it's a real kind of learning curve to figure out where your limitations are. And as I said, I've learned the hard way a few times overdoing it and then really struggling the next day. Or I've had some very significant kind of reactions to fatigue where at times I've been unable to speak because I think my brain is almost like switching parts of me off to just save energy. I'm pretty convinced that the kind of speech loss, because it's so intermittent and seems to have a sort of a relationship to a day where I know I've probably overdone it. Either emotionally overdone it or physically overdone it. Yeah. So I think, as I said, definitely learned the hard way. And it's something that I think we all have to face in different ways at different times through this journey.
Yeah. Did you have any other treatment? Have they tried to do radiotherapy, chemotherapy?
I'm going to the local cancer centre to be fitted with my mask and have the radiotherapy planning scans. My radiotherapy starts in April. And then from there, the plan is to have 6 cycles of chemotherapy. I'm in the gap, between surgery.
The waiting bit.
There was some discussion because of my age and because of what they found when the tumour was biopsied. They said there is a question here as to how much we just wait or how soon, if you like, we proceed with those other therapies. And in the end, they said, look, we recommend let's just get on with it. But I said, look, give me a few weeks. I'll just have a bit of a break if that's all right. And that's fine. So as I said, they wanted to start me in February for the radiotherapy, but I said, look, just give me till April.
Are you getting support? Have you found you've been able to speak to someone? Have you felt you don't want to speak to someone? You're just doing it with you and your wife, your family. How are you coping?
Yeah, I think the emotional kind of battle actually that you have to face is probably, for me, I found the bigger battle than the physical one, because actually coming to terms with that, the kind of, I thought I was okay, and now they're telling me there's something I have that can't be cured, that I have all these treatments and it will take a while to get you back on your own 2 feet kind of thing. And also then the emotional battle you think about, and I felt it, periods of real guilt about having thought, I know it's not true, but having my family having to watch me go through this, like that, the pain that they will feel is somehow because of me. I know that's not really true, but that again, that kind of is part of that emotional turmoil that you go through. And so absolutely, I'm having weekly counseling and I've had lots of peer support, which actually is completely invaluable. There's no price you could put on either of those two things. That without them, I don't know where I'd be in reality. I don't know how I'd be dealing with any of this. Whether or not I am really dealing with it, I don't know. I'm putting one foot in front of the other day by day.
Yeah.
Me reflecting back, it is the emotional support that I've had to have from my family, my friends, through charities, the support networks I've been able to build around me. They are completely priceless. It's more than priceless. I don't even know how to describe their value. And glad I did that early.
Yeah,
I didn't waiting for it to get really bad and then reaching out. The counselling I'm having very regularly has actually come through Millen, and they have Macmillan therapists attached to the local cancer centre. So they support people with all different types of cancers and tumours. So the sort of regular counselling I'm having from them. But actually, what the charities have done, Brains Trust, Brain Tumor Research, and as well as the Brain Tumor Charity, what they've given me is something that I thought I'd lost. It was hope. They give hope that of all the campaigning they do, the fact that they're out there talking about this stuff and making noise about the importance of looking out for people like me and like you. And actually, that's given me hope. They have given practical support, given some advice, help support, get second opinions and those kinds of things, which again is completely invaluable when you feel a little bit lost in all of this, because we're not neuroscientists or neurosurgeons. So important.
They are so important. You've got involved in the Brain Tumor Charity campaign.
For me, a no-brainer. It was about having a voice and not feeling powerless. And so when you'd already been in contact with the Brain Tumor Charity for different reasons, just understanding the diagnosis, understanding what might come next and all those kind of things. And I just said, if there's anything I can do in return, you just ask me. You've given me the hope that I needed. I can, let me pay you back somehow. And so they invited me to be one of the 34. It was such a moving day to look around and see all those other faces. Some of them were patients. Some of them were kind of family members and loved ones. Some of them were children. Some of them were siblings and partners. And actually just to stand alongside them, again, it gave me hope that, it gave me a sense that I'm not in this alone. I'm not alone. And we'll all support each other and we'll all be there and we're all going to make enough noise that someone's going to listen.
Yeah.
And so that for me was a part, that was it. I was there to help make some noise.
Yeah, we're in the...
And we did,
the club that no one wants to be in, but if you are going to be in it, there is plenty of people who are rallying on to try and get better treatments. They're for everything. It's because there are really great treatments out there for many of the tumors. Yes. But ultimately what we'd love is that all of them have a treatment that is going to change and help and get rid of brain cancer, basically, and to be able to manage it a lot more.
Yes.
If someone has it.
Yeah, for sure. And that is the no-brainer, that we have to invest enough money as almost as a human race, not just this country, not just our government, not just our hospitals in the UK, but globally, we have to work together to invest enough money in the research. The cure is there to be found. We just need to, the money will just speed us up in getting there.
Mm. Were you Were you surprised when you realised how small amount funding that brain tumour research gets?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's mind-blowing.
I was surprised and terrified all at once, being in it, so to speak. It was, and then when you read the statistics about 34 people every single day, diagnosed with a brain tumour. And then the fact that they kill more children and adults than any other type of cancer. You're just thinking, hang on a minute. How is this not right up there on the top, near the top of the list? And it's not a competition between cancers. It's not. And it never will be. And it never should be. But it's about
fairness.
It's about, you know, it's about being fair. Mm. Yeah, absolutely right. And I think that's the thing for me. It felt unfair when I started to understand these things. I was like, that can't be right, surely. And then you realize that it is. And then you realize you've got to do something about it. You've got to be part of the answer. You can't stand, I'm not going to stand and, if you like, complain from the sidelines.
I don't know if I've just had a light, I don't know if I just had a light bulb moment here, but where you had 34 people went to Parliament, is that because there's 34 people are diagnosed with brain cancer a day?
Every day.
Is that, this moment had, oh, hang on a minute. I think I've just had a light bulb moment.
That is exactly why. We were representative of the 34 people that day would hear the words, you have a brain tumor.
Yeah. Have you found things that have helped you that you could maybe pass on to someone else?
Yeah, I'm still on the learning curve and it's really steep. I don't know if it will ever get less steep. Maybe it won't. That's okay. The best advice I can give is be prepared to keep listening to your body, learning about what you can, how you want to face these things. Keep speaking to people. Be open. Be honest with how you feel. Be open. Be honest about how your body feels. Don't be afraid. Ask for help. Build your support networks. Family, friends, charities. Do it. Don't wait. Listen to the stories of hope, the stories of survival, but not just survival. It's about being able to live a good quality of life. And there are people out there who have done it.
Mm.
And they're the ones they can add to that, the hope that you need when you first are hearing this. So because you're getting that diagnosis, one step at a time, focused on what's next, focus on what's next, day by day, hour by hour, whatever it is. And remember, you can still be you. And you're stronger than you think you ever were. Oh, I found that out. I had no idea. I would always thought to myself, if this happens to me, I don't know what's going to cope. I know I'm not.
Yeah.
Still be able to put one foot in front of the other at the moment and still trying to live a good and fulfilling and rewarding life despite everything that I have to face. And I believe that in every single person that will be diagnosed with a brain tumor, you can live a fulfilling, rewarding life. You're stronger than you think. Build the support around you and just keep going. Don't lose hope. And that's where peer support has come in so strongly for me, because through the charities, you can access not just the stories, but you can sometimes the people. And I have found a few people who they are absolutely living.
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones.
No, it's just important you see them and know that the type of tumor you have, there's no reason why you can't be one of those people that does really well. And there's no reason that can't be you.
No, that's it. And that's, if you like, that's my master plan.
Yeah.
I'm going to be one of those people.
Exactly. And one of the worst things
until
is to
I'm told
just,
I'm not.
Yeah. But the worst thing to do is to just already think, that's it. That's it. And then give
that's
up before you've even learned what treatments you can have.
Yeah. And part of that for me in terms of not giving up was also finding purpose in this.
You have your kids is a massive one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, I have family and you. Hopefully people are working in kind of jobs that they enjoy and are fulfilling. But for me, this is like another purpose. I was like, this has happened to me for a reason. It's science and nature.
Well, we don't want to wait, but we can make it to a reason. Like we can make sure this wasn't done in vain. Yeah.
Absolutely right. And that's why I'm having a great opportunity to talk to you today. An opportunity to work with a brain tumor charity, to be one of the 34 stood there in Parliament Square. I'm going to turn this on its head. Like, I'm going to do something about this to make things better for not just for me, but for everybody and every person in the future. The 34 today, the 34 tomorrow, the 34 the next day. I'm going to do something so that they have even more of a chance than I've been given.
There'll
point.
Be so many people grateful. Like I'm grateful for people like you that are doing this. There'll be so many people that will be very grateful. They don't want to be quite out there speaking out, but you're doing it for many people, not just yourself. So you're the voice of a lot of people. And thank you for doing that.
No, I couldn't think of doing anything else, because actually it's given me energy. It's given me another sense of purpose, and it's given me actually ways to connect with people, and actually it supports me in return. So it's been really important to me to do this. And I guess that plays into what I've done as a career for the last 15 years working in the health service in the UK.
Tell us a bit about what you do in the NHS.
So I'm not a clinical member of staff. So I'm not a nurse, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist. My job is essentially to find stuff that isn't quite working properly and fix it. And so, that's what I've done. I've found work with services that are having difficult time, perhaps meeting all the needs of their patients, or helping set up new services to meet the needs of patients as things change in our society, as people live longer, older, better lives. And so my job has just been to a creative job, essentially, in the health service to fix stuff, to remedy things, to create new services and new ways of treating people. And so that's what I've done for the last 15 years. I've given it pretty much everything in terms of my professional life. And I've been able to see
both sides of it now.
Both sides of it. And actually, one of the services I supported to create, they came and visited me when I first left hospital to make sure I was okay. And that service wouldn't have existed in some ways, in a sort of strange quirk of fate. It wouldn't have been here if it hadn't been for the work that me and my colleagues had done. I also worked really hard through the pandemic. We set up about 5 different vaccination centres. Those services delivered, I think, more than 100,000 vaccines over that time. And that's, just a job is to make stuff happen, make stuff better, make stuff change where it needs to. And so I had always had a sense of purpose around that. And actually going through what I'm going through now, I'm just having to harness that in a different way.
Would you like to say thank you to anybody?
I think the person I'd thank the most is probably my wife, because with humility, with love and with kindness, she stood alongside me every single step. And I don't know how she's done it. I have absolutely no idea. It was there as I was told I had a brain tumor and that they couldn't remove it all and that there was going to be no cure. She was there as I was wheeled into the theatre, brain surgery. She's been with me at every single scan, every single appointment. I genuinely don't know how she's doing it. Also, I do make a point at every appointment, at every phone call, whatever it is, I always just say, thanks for speaking to me today. Thanks for answering my questions. Thanks for listening to me. Absolutely, it's always worth making sure you say it to your doctors, your nurses, your therapists too, because actually, they care. And I've seen that firsthand as a patient, but I've seen it from the other side as a member of staff in the NHS. Whatever we think about the NHS in the UK, and sometimes it can be frustrating, and sometimes you can always get what you need, but the people in it are what keeps it ticking over. And they keep working hard because they care. And so I always make a point of saying thank you. Probably to the point of making some of them feel uncomfortable, actually, in terms of being very grateful and saying, we bought my clinical nurse specialist and my surgical team chocolates and biscuits and stuff at Christmas, because it was operated on not far before Christmas. And we just said, just thank you. You took care of me. You did what you said you would do. You said I'd walk out of the hospital, and you made it happen. And I'm enormously grateful for all the professionals supporting me, and as well as the charity. So again, they listen, they answer your questions, they put you in touch with people that can support you. And that's why building them support networks are so important. And I've realized how grateful I am for all of them. And I'll say thank you to all of them.
Thank you so much for sharing with us and just being a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month and try and make a bit of a noise while we're here in March. Although we should do it all year round and people will, but we may as well make it even louder during March.
Even noisier.
Even noisier. Even though none of us want noise, actually, because I'm really sensitive to noise now.
We can get overstimulated by noise and
exactly,
light.
Exactly. Both of those, yes. But yeah, this is a good reason to make some noise. And yeah.
Do you have any stories that were in hospital?
It's a little bit of fun. Funny story, when I was in hospital. I was in hospital for about 6 days after the surgery. I've always had a sort of a slightly wicked sense of humour. And I bought myself a t-shirt that said straight out of brain surgery on it. And I wore that around the neurosurgical ward whilst I was recovering and starting to move and starting to get out of bed on my own and all that kind of stuff. And I wore that and I got a few funny looks from other patients. That was a little bit funny, but the staff really appreciated it. And they said, we can see sometimes when people are having a really tough time, we don't always see the real them. And they said, in you, we're seeing the real you, like a wonderful sense of humor, a positive outlook. And so it was a nice kind of sense of coming out of surgery and it's still me. I'm still me. And that was something that was really important to me, that I didn't feel like a different person, that I was still able to be me and still have the same outlook on life. It was a funny picture of that on my Instagram, actually, of me and the ward manager.
Thank you so much for speaking to me. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to help, as I said, as part of my purpose. Thank you so much for you said thank you for me speaking to you. Thank you genuinely from the bottom of my heart for asking me to make some noise.
Yes, let's go make some noise.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.